Meeting of Police, Fire and Rescue Board. Just a reminder that this meeting is recorded and will be publicly available following the meeting. Just check if there is any apologies.
No apologies, Chair.
Thanks. And order of business is as it is in order paper. Perfect, thank you. Any declarations of interest? Interest can be made now or at any point during the meeting. Just check the minutes of the previous meeting, which is on pages 3 to 10 of your pack. Happy to approve those minutes.
Take
your
time.
I'm taking the silence as...
Yep, I'll take silence as complicit. Okay. Perfect. And we'll move on to public reports. First one is 5.1 Local Plan Performance Report, report by Scottish Fire and Rescue Service.
Thank you, Chair. Just before we go on to the performance report and our prevention and protection report from Dean and Steve, just to give a bit of strategic overview at the moment in terms of the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service. I previously discussed at the group the Scottish Government Fire Framework, which was released, and subsequently our strategic plan, which was out for consultation, which we fed back on, I think, from Midlothian, and was published on the 3rd of October. And I'd like to thank this board and the council for supporting my proposal to extend the local plan reproduction to December 2017. And in that paper that I presented at the time, I formally set out a process for how we were going to achieve that over the time. I think it's become even more pertinent now in terms of the developments around about the Local Outcome Improvement Plan for October 17, and I attended a meeting last week, an engagement day with police colleagues, which was hugely beneficial in looking at the formulation of their local plan and how they're moving towards crime themes as opposed to crime types. And I think this will be hugely advantageous for us as partners in being able to attribute some of our work into these categories and to be able to then report on outcomes better within the communities. So, as I say, we look to be producing our local plan in December 2017. I think the local plan needs to reflect our work, but as we move forward, in particular, I want to draw your attention to the report and the performance figures today, because I have some areas of concern around about the performance and areas of concern around about how we are working in the area and what impact we can make with some of the interventions we're using, given that I would suggest that figures are looking like many of our areas are plateauing at the moment, and I'm not sure how we can drive them down any further. So we need to be able to reflect the work that we do, but we also need to be able to reflect and change through some of our collaborative work and the outcomes and benefits to the communities. And we need to balance the requirement that this scrutiny committee has on us through the local plan to scrutinise our performance, but we also need a local plan that reflects what our intention is and some of our innovative practices and ways that we can improve outcomes for the communities. And of course, all of this is set against the uncertainty over our budget allocation moving forward, which we don't currently have from Scottish Government. At the moment, we're looking at an off-station structure review, which involves reviewing all those staff that don't work on frontline fire appliances. So not quite the back shop, but support roles, fire safety enforcement, fire safety prevention protection roles, some elements of training and other services. And we need to look at potential alternative delivery models for these highly important areas of the service. clearly at the moment we're looking to secure our position and make ourselves invaluable to the Scottish Government. We are looking to secure the funding levels that we currently receive, or potentially enhance those. Assistant Chief Officer Scott has been seconded away, and he's been preparing an outline business case for Scottish Government around about the future of the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service, and that's been submitted, and there's been subsequent discussion, and it's been subjected to some development and alterations. But we recognise a need for some significant change within the service. At the moment, we've managed the reform and the change process without making any cuts to the front line. And I think it's important to understand that without a funding increase, it'll be difficult for us to avoid service reductions moving forward. With that in mind, we recognise that there's a need to transform the service and what the service does and what the service expectations are. We've got lots of evidence to support a need for change. I think the service is brigaded in a way that it has been for many, many years, and our resources are in the places that they've been for many, many years, and we respond in the same ways we've responded for a long time. That's to emergency incidents predominantly, but those emergency incidents are evolving, and the time of day of those emergency incidents is changing. And things like severe weather and that we saw last year with Storm Frank and terrorism and more hazardous materials type incidents leads us to have to look very carefully at the way that we can deliver our service. I think our delivery model needs to be flexible enough to meet this evolving threat and to meet the changes that are ongoing within society. We do recognise that we have a good footprint in our communities and we have an ability to reduce risk in other areas. And when I say that, I talked previously about the figures, the performance figures for this quarter two, and my feeling that we may have plateaued in some of these areas, but there are areas where we can reduce risk to the communities. And we've seen examples out of hospital cardiac arrest, medical first response, unintended harm, trips and falls assessments coming into Midlothian. And there's areas that we can impact on as well. We need to look at the potential for flexibility in duty patterns, locations and the actual role of a firefighter. And we need to recognise and reward firefighters for undertaking a broader, more flexible role, if that's the route that Scottish Government wants us to take. And we need to deliver all this within whatever funding envelope we receive next month and moving forward. I'd like to ensure that the firefighter role is sustainable, and I feel that the best way to do that is by enhancing the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service so that it remains relevant and important to society. I'll take any questions at that point before we go into the performance.
Thank you. Any questions for David? Ad?
Yeah, hi, thanks, Chair. Can I just ask the budget that's going to be set, you're going to get that in December this year, and I take it the changes or any alterations or any service changes or whatever you have to do would need to be done by April, would that be, or May, would it be April? I'm just thinking for next year's budget, because obviously that's when it would kick in, I suppose.
Yeah, I think we need to. There will be some changes, as I say. We've talked about the off-station structure review, which should be up in place before April, and that will be the first stage of that. I think one of the problems that we face at the moment going forward is that we're looking potentially at a year-to-year budget, which doesn't allow us the ability to forward plan with a great degree of accuracy. So at the moment, we're looking at the concept of change as well as the practicalities. But yes, absolutely, there will have to be some changes for April.
Councillor Devink.
You mentioned earlier that you were having to face the possibility of dealing with staff reductions. How much has technology change caused you to be faced with that? Because I was reading the other day that particularly in organizations that are very much based on administration, there are going to be enormous cutbacks. Of course, you are not based on administration, but you have a lot of technology change, and it would be interesting to see how much of that would play a part in you having to reduce staff.
I think technological change, I assume you mean particularly around about ICT infrastructure, is a challenge to us. But I think it indicates across that wider resource kind of area of infrastructure that there are changes that need to be made for the long term. And an example I would use is that of fire appliances and the capital expenditure and investment that's put into buying fire engines. And you'll realise that our fire engines, other than being a bit bigger and a bit faster and a bit shinier, pretty much look like fire engines that we've always seen. And we need to understand that when you buy a fire engine, you're investing in a 20-year, potentially, resource to the communities. And we're not sure at the moment that those fire engines are the right vehicles kitted out with the right equipment in the right areas to deal with some of the emergency incident types that we have. So this is a type of fundamental approach that we're looking at. So yes, technology, I suppose the advancements of technology can cut across a number of these different areas, and everything is being looked at currently.
Thank you very much. That was really helpful, and I'm sure we'd all agree that you are invaluable. Do you want to continue?
Thank you, Chair. I'll go on to the quarterly scrutiny report for quarter two of this year, which is July to September. And I'll start on the first page, which I think is page 14 in your pack. And I'll go to the table at the top, which looks at our six key performance indicators. Although we have loads of indicators, we've got these six for Midlothian. And there's, if you have colour copies, I have no idea if you have colour copies or black and white. The ones at the tables that show a diamond at the end means that we are above our year-to-date figures from last year. So out of the six performance indicators, half-year, year-to-date at the half-year, the six-month period, and four of the areas were above what we were last year, and two of the areas were below that. So as far as the remainder of this year is concerned, we have got a wee bit of work to do to try and get those figures down to the exceptional low that we had last year in a lot of these areas. So there is a lot of work for us to do. We've been having meetings, discussions on how we're going to do this and progress this and try and keep these figures reducing or get them lower. So you can be rest assured that we'll be working towards that. Year to date, we've had 679 incidents in Midlothian, which is an increase on 22 incidents on the year before. Year to date. So I'm going to explain further detail the information that we've got, and I'll take you firstly to page 17, which is accidental dwelling fires. During this last quarter, we responded to 18 accidental dwelling fires in Midlothian, which is an increase of 9 in the same period as last year. We are in line with the Scottish trend for accidental dwelling fires, and also that of the east of Scotland. So we're about the same as the rest of Scotland as far as accidental dwelling fires are concerned. Of the 18 fires, nearly 80% of them occurred in single occupancy households, and 40% of those being in the over 65 age category, which are the two areas that come up quite regularly at this meeting. Elderly people and single occupancy households are the areas we need to target, and we continue to work towards targeting if we truly want to reduce the incidence of accidental dwelling fire in the home. The main causes were cooking. 80% was cooking, 18% smoking. So that's, it used to be smoking was a lot higher than cooking. Now we're seeing a little change. So there's another area that we need to, all the information we have, we analyse and we look at how we start taking preventative measures depending on each area is different. But we're starting to find across local authorities now that cooking is becoming more popular than smoking for causing fires in the household. I suppose it's never pleasing to say that we're up 50% on what we were last year at this time, but the pleasing thing to note was that 95% of the fires were confined to the room of origin. So if the fire started in the kitchen, the products of combustion were normally confined to that area, with very little damage beyond that area, which is obviously, as we've touched before, it's fitting smoke detectors that allow people to get out of the house earlier, that alert them or their neighbours to the fact there's a fire in the house. So smoke detectors is definitely the way forward. We just need to be, I suppose, from a partnership approach, we just need all partners, and we keep going on about this, we need all partners to understand that we can fit smoke detectors anywhere, and that's great. But if it's single occupants of households that we need to get into, and more elderly people, then that's areas we need to target first. I'm not saying we ignore everybody else, but these are the areas we need to target first. And we do, and we're working on that regularly with our partners to continue to get that information in from social work and other parts of the local authority and other partners within the community planning forum. During the period, we carried out 243 home safety visits within that period, and these were a mixture of high risk and medium risk home safety visits within that area. So a wee bit work to do on accidental dwelling fires, and we'll continue to pursue this and continue to attempt to reduce this as we move forward. The next page I'll take you to is page 17, which takes us to casualties from these dwelling fires. We had no fatalities during the last period. 19. Sorry, page 19, sorry. Apologies. We had no fatalities, which is very pleasing, in the last quarter, and we only had 3 other casualties due to fire. Unfortunately, we are up an increase in 4 in the year-to-date figure from what we were last year. Last year at this time we only had 3 casualties. This year we've got 7, which isn't a great number, but we need to continue to look to reduce that. This year we had 1 fire in the early part of the year which had 3 casualties in it, and 1 recently were 2 casualties. So you get a fire where you've got 5 casualties and 2 fires, that really puts your figures up. Not that 7's a great number, it's a lot better than it used to be probably 10 years ago, but we need to continue to push this down. 2 of the casualties who were rescued unfortunately went to hospital, which is very unusual. I normally report here that the majority of our casualties don't go to hospital, and the reason they went to hospital is they were over 90 years of age and they had taken some smoke inhalation, and once a person gets to that age and they've inhaled some smoke, the ambulance will always take them to hospital as a precautionary check-up, and that's the reason they went to hospital. The other casualty was rescued and given oxygen at the scene and wasn't taken to hospital. The next page is page 21, and we'll talk about deliberate secondary fires. During the period, there were 79 deliberate dwelling fires, which is an increase in 30 in the same period last year, so it's quite a significant increase in this area. The wards most affected were Midlothian East, West and South. 60% of the incidents were deliberate secondary fires in bushes, scrubland, gorse, etc. And 40%, roughly 40% involved setting fire to bins or litter or waste, which is a thing we see These can be cyclical, depending on the weather conditions. And having looked at it, it's been quite an even spread across the 3 months of this period. There's not been any significant patterns or changes in each month. We have had a period of quite good weather. What I have noticed is that something must happen in Midlothian on a Friday night, because we had no fires in this nature on a Friday night right across the period, none at all on a Friday. But it was quite even across the other days of the week and the weekend. So there must be something on a Friday night. So I need to look into that. And what's that? Is that on a Friday, is it? And as we always know, the fires happen between the periods of about 3 o'clock in the afternoon and 9 o'clock at night, which is about the same for house fires, actually. It's about 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock at night. So that gives us some information to start targeting. We have done quite a lot of targeting through through partner agencies. The police have been involved in deliberate fire settings that happened up at Straton when they were targeting refuse bins off the shopping centre up there. So there's been quite a lot of work done there. And the other areas, there has been quite a lot of work done in the schools. But as we just discussed in the Community Safety Justice Partnership, these things can... We're having the same in other local authority areas where there's a big increase in secondary fires, deliberate secondary fires, and we think a lot of it's to do with social media. What they see in one area is getting replicated in another. So that's another area we need to sort of progress and try to... Getting into the schools and doing early intervention is really important for us. But I think it's more than just going into the schools. We need to find out who the ringleaders are. And I know Kenny's been targeting them, and I know down in East Lothian, the inspector down there's been targeting the ringleaders, but it seems to be a wave that's happening right across Scotland at the moment, and particularly there's two local authority areas here. So we'll continue to work on that. There is a lot of partnership work done through the TAC, and we get a lot of assistance from our partners, the council and the police, in respect to that. Page 23, road traffic collisions. We attended 11 road traffic collisions, which is a decrease in 5 in the same period last year. I won't go into that. We're slightly above the Scottish and East Delivery Area trends, but obviously that's not the amount of road traffic collisions that we have in Midlothian. That's just what we get called to. The next section is probably a wee bit more beneficial in terms of the casualties from special services, which is on page 25. We had 18 casualties and 5 of which were fatalities from special service incidents. It's an increase of 2 casualties, but road traffic collisions accounted for 8 injuries to people and 5 fatalities during that last quarter. And the 5 other casualties we had were due to assisting in medical emergencies, acting as first responders. Now, this is, I've said in previous meetings that this medical response thing would tend to go up with us responding to defibrillator incidents and things like that. Midlothian isn't increasing as much as other areas, and we think that's possibly due to being so close to Edinburgh. Edinburgh tends to take in all the local ambulances because they've got the bulk of people. And because Midlothian's on its doorstep, we tend to get supported with the ambulances from Edinburgh. Other outlying local authorities, they're us attending defibrillator incidents or medical responses are increasing quite significantly. It's not quite happened the same in Midlothian. Not sure if that will with us continuing this project that we're doing. So we'll wait and see. But at the moment, it's pretty steady. And the last area we'll go to is UFAS, unwanted fire alarm signals. Another increased area, we had 96, which is an increase of 8 in the same period last year. 50% of them were caused by equipment failure within the fire alarm systems. 8% were malicious, which is pretty decent. We don't have a lot of malicious calls in this area, which is good. And 38% of them were caused by cooking. It is the highest year-to-date figure we've had in the last 5 years, sitting at 184. We continue to work with premises that have trigger, we have trigger levels, and we continue to work with those premises and give them advice where they meet our triggers. So our first point of call is to go in and give them some advice on what is wrong. A lot of it is equipment failure, and the majority of them actually happen in schools and colleges, offices and residential dwellings, you know, supported residential dwellings. So our continued focus is to continue to reduce this where we can, but for every premises that we deal with and sort out, another one comes online. So it's a continual effort trying to reduce this area. And faulty equipment, as systems get older, more faults are going to appear. So we continue to try. It's not great. It's not a great report at the half-year date for me, having to say that we're up in quite a lot of areas, but we do continue to work on each area, and you can be rest assured about that. I'll take any questions if you have any questions on that before I hand over to Steve for the partnership working.
Just to pick up your point about partnership working, and I did notice that you guys are now on Twitter, so welcome to Twitter. But it is good to see engagement. I know there's a big focus on Elsley over the winter, and I did see the press releases out about that yesterday, and attended an event for elderly with Nick last Saturday and previous day at schools as well. So I think that message is welcomed and is really getting through, and you can really see how you guys are adapting. So that's really good. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? No. Nope. Happy to move on.
Thank you, Chair. On page 29, we have the detail around the fire safety enforcement audits. It's probably worth mentioning at this point around the unwanted fire alarm signals. Our enforcement officer based at Dalkeith is providing an extra focus on our unwanted fire alarm signals, as well as trying to maintain the audit outputs that we're expected to in terms of his local target. Also worth mentioning that the framework for how we deliver our audits is in the process of being reviewed and subject to some change. But as it stands just now, the focus is still on our highest risk premises that generally are sleeping accommodation. So our care homes, our hospitals, and some of these will, particularly in the early part of the year, do take up quite a bit of time. So albeit we are showing below target, that's something that will continue to improve as the year goes on. In terms of our home fire safety visits, as Dean already alluded to, we've delivered 243 of these across the area, with three smoke alarms being fitted in 72 of those. Again, in terms of the points, we are trying to focus our resources to the highest risks. And each one of those visits would attract 24 points in terms of our target. But we're still getting people asking for visits that potentially don't need them in terms of lower risk. But what we are again looking at is a review nationally across Scotland around how we manage the high volume of lower risk visits, which means that we can't get to some of the higher risks and really focus on those that need us, and that would then result in us having less accidental dwelling fires. So that's a work in progress, and I'll obviously report back here when that's been finalised. On page 31, that just gives a comparison of the last two quarters. As you can see, we've gone from 206 visits to 243 visits over that period, but our output in the graph in the page before still looks very, very similar. So again, that is because we are having to do some lower risk visits that in the future that might not be delivered in the same way. In terms of the partnership working, an awful lot goes on, an awful lot goes on across Midlothian that's never really reported on, and as Chair's already alluded to, we are now on Twitter for the area, and will continue to push our message across the social media network as much as we can. In terms of our youth engagement work, we are still running our cool down crew despite pressures from our own internal budgets, and we fund that fully ourselves through David's budget schemes. The most recent one involved some colleagues and pupils from Dalkeith High School who were given the opportunity to attend the course in September. The Phoenix programme, again, still runs every Thursday night at Dalkeith Fire Station with 15 young people attending that. Again, that's something that will be part of our ongoing review because that is not supported by anyone out with the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service. So these are all things that prove difficult for us as our budgets get tighter. Sounds like bad news, but it's not due to some changes that we might have next year through a staffing model change. There may be an opportunity to deliver that in a different way. Road safety, we were involved in the Tomorrow's Driver event, which again successfully running every year in partnership with a whole range of partners across Mid and East Lothian. The community engagement events, as you can see with the local crews at Dalkeith, have been involved in a number of those. And on the 10th of September, we also had the Fire Station Doors Open Day, again another successful event to try and engage with the communities across Mid Lothian. In terms of our local area liaison officers, now working as part of the community safety delivery group at Fairfield House, at least a day a week, obviously unless he's on leave. And that's something still in its early stages, and we'll be working alongside partners to make sure that that can be more effective within Mid Lothian. The antisocial behaviour officer from the council also came along to engage at our cool down crew, and that was an opportunity to engage with young people in a what we class as a fairly neutral venue, and that was seen to be very positive, so I think that's going to continue as well. Our information sharing with our police colleagues is constantly improving in terms of us going out to provide advice for people that might be at threat of deliberate fires, and also that police officers now can some have been trained to refer directly into our electronic toolkit that manages our home fire safety visits. We've touched on the street and retail park issues, which I think by the sounds of it is going to continue. We're also providing some enforcement guidance to the retailers there about how they can manage their refuse safer and away from the building, so should it get set on fire, it's not going to have a detrimental effect on their business. And just to finish off with our Living Safely in the Home project, which is really, rather than us delivering home fire safety visits, we're delivering more of a home safety visit. And if we are the first agency through the door, that person may be at risk of fire, but they maybe never have a fire, but they might fall, break a hip, and spend a long time in hospital, and then beyond that, recovery elsewhere, and may never return home as a result. So the falls screening that we are now doing and the training provided by the council to allow our frontline firefighters to do that means that not only are people safer from fire when we've left their house, if there isn't a potential that they're going to have a fall, we will do the fall screening for them. And as you can see, since September when it launched, there was 8 referrals into the rapid response intervention team of the council to ensure these people are safer when we step out the door. And that's me. Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much for that report. Yep.
Sorry, just to finish off, Chair, I think those two reports highlight some of the areas of concern that I had and displayed at the start of the meeting. And just from opening statement, I just want to kind of go back to a couple of things I talked about. We look at home fire safety visits, and 243 home fire safety visits delivered in Mid Lothian over the 3-month period, quarter two, with 72 smoke alarms fitted, yet we still had an increase of 9 on our accidental dwelling fires. Absolutely right that we're
happy that those were confined to room of origin and there was no fatalities from those fires. But again, I pose the question that given that we've got 15 years experience now of preventative work and doing home fire safety visits, have we reached the end of that road, and should we be looking at unintended harm and high-risk, vulnerable people within the community rather than the worried well who we continue to provide home fire safety visits to and fit smoke detectors and have very, very little chance of having a house fire? It's just food for thought for me, and I think whilst we continue on a path of fire safety enforcement and home fire safety visits that are quantitative and look at a points target which is internally set by the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service, we're missing the opportunity to really help people in the right areas of the community.
Any questions and comments on that report? No, happy to move on. Kenny?
Yeah, Chair, if I can, I'm just conscious of the fact, there's a couple of times Streighton Retail Park has been mentioned, and we had a really positive meeting yesterday, which was attended by the fire service. Nick was there for the fire service. I attended along with a couple of my colleagues, policing-wise, and there was over 20 of the retailers were there. Probably for me, the most significant part was the actual owner of the park from the Peel Group. He came up from Manchester to attend the meeting, and there was also representation from the other owners, because I wasn't aware that Streighton was divided. There was a small part that was a separate owner, but they were represented there as well. But I have to say it was a really positive meeting in terms of moving things forward. There, the four key items were discussed, obviously theft, shoplifting, fire raising, youth disorder, and overall sort of fear perception of crime. A lot of actions came away. We're hopeful of getting a retail crime partnership up there. In terms of the fire raising aspects, there was bits around about the actual design of the retail park itself. A big issue for them was fly tipping, and again I think there's an action to be taken away for that, just round about general advice that they can get through there. But probably the biggest one for me was the commitment from the owners of the retail site itself to install CCTV throughout that park area, and they're working in conjunction with the smaller landowner as well to see if they can come up with a sort of mutual agreement, and also review the overall lighting in that area as well. They recognise that Streighton is developing and developing fast, and they have a duty of care. So overall I would say it was a really positive meeting, and hopefully some of the troubles that are being experienced at the moment in Streighton, we'll see that reducing over the coming months.
Thanks for that input, Kenny. I know I've had, as a ward councillor, I've had lots of information from constituents about that, so that's really reassuring.
May I? Sorry.
Councillor?
In Mayfield, we have had an awful lot of fires in bins and in fly tipping. Is that something that you are being aware of and able to sort out?
Sorry, bins in that area are, we have been targeting them. The guys have done quite a lot of work in these areas, particularly bins. There was a little stage where bins were getting set fire to next to stairs and things like that, so they've done quite a lot of work earlier. And I think that was quarter one, there was a lot of work done there. And then during that summer period, there's a lot of work done to try to make sure that the kids don't set fire, or they know what they're doing, or what potential issues they're causing when they're setting fire to bins. But unfortunately, you know, it still continues. We were just discussing this the other day about, you know, we don't know it. Sometimes it goes quiet, and then all of a sudden, it doesn't even matter in the weather, it just goes crazy for a period. And a lot of it is to do with certain groups. You know, they maybe go quiet for a little while, and then you get a couple of ringleaders and it starts again. So it's quite difficult to track down. It doesn't just happen in one area all the time. There's not been a great deal. Wherever there's trends, we'll absolutely deal with them, but sometimes over the whole area, there's no trends there. So we're continually looking out for trends to see if there's areas we need to target, and that's done through both internally ourselves and through the TAC, which is very, very effective at identifying things. But unfortunately, it's always after it's happened, you know, there's only way we can do it. So yeah, we continue to look at those areas.
Thank you. Moving on to item 5.2, scrutiny report by Police Scotland.
Thanks, Chair. I'll say a few words by way of, if I don't fall off this table, introduction, I suppose, from a force perspective and a divisional perspective, and then Kenny will lead us through the sort of detail from the scrutiny board point of view. Strategic issues still facing the force, much like our fire and rescue colleagues. The Chief is continuing to work closely with the police authority in terms of establishing a sustainable policing model that operates within the allocated budget that we've got. As has been reported here at this table previously and obviously through media reporting, we continue to have targets we need to make in terms of savings and efficiencies. From my divisional point of view, we are contributing towards that and working very closely through the management team to manage, particularly around about overtime and various other things, to make sure that we're as effective and efficient as we possibly can be. The key issue, I suppose, for me round about that is that we do absolutely, if we need to use overtime for any operational reason, that is definitely used. There is no embargo or ban on any type of overtime, and we use that and target that where the need and the demand is most effective and most needed. So, again, just to sort of make that very clear, and as I look forward to Christmas and New Year, that will be a very demanding time, and we plan in obviously an element of overtime around about that. One other thing that perhaps has been reported through the media, but also people will be aware because I've written, is in relation to ongoing estates review and use of police stations. Clearly, there is a vast number of properties that Police Scotland inherited from the precursor organisations, and rightly and properly we are looking to see where we're making best use of those from a strategic point of view, led by ACC Andy Cowie on behalf of the force. The reporting that has happened in the recent few weeks about some of that was in response, I believe, to a Freedom of Information request, and was not particularly fulsome in the reporting, in that it grabbed the headline that there were station closures. A lot of the stations that were listed were really about reviewing where the facilities can be enhanced rather than closing them. I know that Kenny and myself, we are looking to see where we can actually... There may be some issues from a Midlothian point of view, but it's not a case of closing stations per se. It's about where we can actually work together with other facilities. So it would be where there's an alternative rather than closing. We don't want to close our footprint or our engagement. So that process, though, will be done on a full engagement and consultation basis. And we've kicked that off by indicating that by way of letter and inviting comment and dialogue. And Kenny's leading on that from a local perspective. So again, if reassurance were needed to any of the members, there is no agenda of railroading through any changes without full engagement with yourselves on any of that, and our engagement with our communities that we serve. From a divisional point of view, and again, this is across the four local authority areas, and I think it's important by way of context before Kenny gives you the local, we continue to have some significant challenges in terms of violence, particularly around serious assault, and that's replicated across the four local authority areas. So again, it's not a specific issue here in Midlothian. Kenny, I'll talk you through some of the numbers where that is. The trends in relation to that are driven by our more robust approach to domestic violence, more fulsome recording, more confidence on the part of victims to disclose that they've been the victims of serious assault in the past, and some slight changes to the recording practices and recording definitions. So what used to be recorded as minor injuries are now being recorded as a serious assault. All of that really is just by way of explanation. The reality is it really doesn't matter to me, as long as we provide an excellent service to the victims, to the witnesses, and that the outcome is as positive it can be in terms of bringing offenders to justice. But it is important to just highlight the fact that some of the recording practices, people may question some of those numbers in due course. We've also seen an upturn in terms of serious sexual offences and rape inquiries. The increase in that relates to historical reporting, and again this is allied to the issue of confidence in reporting and our engagement with victims, particularly around about domestic violence, and a questionnaire that we now do with victims, which tends to elicit certain complaints. The difficulty with some of those are that they're out with the forensic window and they're protracted long-term inquiries and take significant resources to actually progress them through to a successful conclusion. But again, it's very difficult to do year-on-year comparisons when those are the types of factors which are playing out in our recording. Roads policing, a significant issue for me, divisionally, fatal and serious crashes, and Kenny alluded to some of the issues locally. There's a slight increase, I think, here in Mid Lothian. Again, we've analysed that within an inch of its life, and colleagues from Fire and Rescue have already alluded to it. The main issue continues to be driver behaviour, and we use every tactic that we've got available to us to enforce, encourage drivers to understand the impact of their behaviour. And as we go into the winter season, that becomes even more significant with the changes in the weather and so on and so forth. Housebreaking, Kenny alluded to it locally, is an issue, and he's got a very robust plan in relation to it. We are experiencing some significant housebreaking trends at times, driven largely by travelling criminals from east and west who come into our division and commit these crimes. We've had some good success as well. The detection rate is actually well above force average. But again, we know this is a pernicious crime and one that we continue to have as a priority from a divisional point of view. And Kenny is extremely robust, I know, from his area in tackling housebreaking. On the positive front, and appreciating what the colleagues from Fire and Rescue, the difficult time of Halloween and Bonfire Night, from our point of view, we actually have experienced a really good period over that, driven by lots of proactive policing, lots of partnership working and engagement with young people. I think it's probably been the best Halloween Bonfire Night I've experienced as far as the level of reporting and the level of criminality around about it. And we didn't see lots of children robbing one another of their sweeties on the street, which was actually good to see. Looking forward then, as I mentioned, Christmas and New Year, a really challenging time for us. Lots of public holidays obviously spaced out over the weekend and additional days in between. So that will pose significant challenges for us in terms of our resourcing. There's major football games, Hogmanay, various other things, which will be a demand on the force. So all our officers pretty much will be mobilised throughout that time. So they will be working very long hours and demanding times, and we will be supporting that throughout in terms of command. So as well as that, we've got our festive policing plans, which will be starting up in terms of retail and so on and so forth, in terms of reassurance and preventative work there. The winter road safety campaign and winter drink driving campaigns, those will also be led by our road policing colleagues. And slightly longer term than that, we've kicked off the process to develop our policing plans for 2017 and beyond. We had an event last week which was attended by representatives across the four local authority areas, and those processes will continue to be refined over coming weeks, and we'll formulate the plans as we go forward 2017 and beyond. So that's, I think, a quick skate across force business and divisional business. I'm happy to take any questions now, or perhaps might be wise at the end after Kenny's given his detailed input.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Chair. Just in terms of the police report, I don't intend going through it page by page, and I'll reference what page I'm on and what the header is. Start on page 36, which is priority one, the reducing the volume of crime aggravated by alcohol. Again, it's sitting slightly off target there, but you'll see that we're narrowing that gap between quarter one and quarter two, which is encouraging. And when we look at what we're doing, I spoke last time, I think, at the meeting about revising the Dalkeith Town Centre dispersal, which has been done. There's a far more robust plan put in place for the Dalkeith Town Centre. We've already started work in trying to encourage licensees to sign up for the Best Bar None awards, so I'm hopeful that we'll have more on board this year than we've ever had.
We talk about introducing a pilot arrest referral project, and I think for those who are at the Community Justice Board that preceded this one here, we're now aware that there has been somebody who's accepted that post. The purpose of this is for an individual to be engaging with people at the point of crisis, i.e. when they're in our custody area within Dalkeith. And it's not just round about substance misuse issues, they're also going to be exploring opportunities about mental health and trying to fast-track these individuals into services that will assist them and hopefully break that cycle of offending. So, again, that's a very, very positive step in terms of prevention. And lastly, the boss spoke there about the divisional festive campaign. Yeah, alcohol, licensing issues and violence go hand in hand, and that's certainly a priority area for us over that festive campaign. If I now move to page 40, priority 2, domestic abuse crimes and offences, achieving the detection rate of at least 75%. You'll see we're slightly off target there at 72.4%. However, just in terms of the trend, we've had a really robust approach within Police Scotland over the last 3 years, and we always believed that it would plateau at some point in time, and I do genuinely believe that it is now starting to plateau when you see that actually the overall incidence of reported domestic abuse has came down 5.5% this year. It's nothing that we're complacent about, because we're still doing a lot of work in terms of working with partners in this field and trying to encourage victims and instill that confidence for them to come forward. And again, domestic abuse features heavily as part of our festive campaign, because we do know that there is generally an increase round about domestics over that festive period, so it's a priority area for us over the festive period. Moving on to page 41, reducing violence, and again the boss touched upon overall is serious violence is up throughout the division, and Midlothian's no exception to that. We've seen commission rates up, both in terms particularly and about serious assaults. We've seen that first half, the half yearly, it's went from 13 to 23, and robberies also increased. Again, I think I stressed the last time that I want to reassure members, though, that the vast majority of these are taking place between individuals who know one another, which is reflected on our overall detection rates, which sits for Group 1 for serious violent crime is sitting at 91%. So whilst we don't want victims, when we do actually have a victim, we're very robust and proactive in terms of getting to the bottom of what has taken place and trying to bring perpetrators to justice. Indeed, our serious assault one's sitting at 103% detection rate. So that's because we detected one for last year. It's included in this year's figures. But it just goes to show that we don't give up, councillor. There's also, just in terms of that, what we have done, we've invited our violence reduction unit to come in and have a look at our practices within the division, just to see that they're satisfied with them, and is there anywhere else and any best practice from throughout the country that we're missing a wee trick in terms of trying to reduce violence. So that is ongoing at the moment, and we'll await feedback that we have from them. But probably for me, it's everything now is moving towards prevention and looking forward and trying to reduce the number of victims. And I had a meeting with all deputy head teachers just about a couple of weeks ago in trying to push forward the No Nice Better Lives campaigns, the Mentoring and Violence programme, which is looking at that bystander approach and trying to get peers involved in that at that young age to actually not tolerate violence. And lastly, to really push the Fearless campaign. And Fearless for members, it's very much like a Junior Crime Stoppers, but it's web-based. And what we're trying to do is trying to get young people on board who can access that and provide us with information, knowing full well it's completely anonymous and they are protected. Lots of this came out of the Bailey Gwynne review, which is just the annual unfortunate tragic circumstances up north relating to the death of a young person. And I know it's been hugely successful in West Lothian within schools, so I'm really keen that schools pick this mantle up and start promoting it. We've already had one of the schools came back to us and want an input, and are dead keen to get that up and running. So these type of things, we're hoping that, whilst it may take a wee while and in a few years to get through there, we're genuinely hoping that we get this next generation on board with us to try and reduce the levels of violence that we're currently seeing. Moving on to page 43, which is making our roads safer. And again, I mean, my colleagues for the fire service touched upon it, and I think the headline grabber this year for us within Midlothian, because if I take the fatalities out of things, the actual overall picture is slightly better than what it has been the previous year. However, I am very, very mindful of the number of fatal road collisions that we've had within Midlothian. Unfortunately for us, we've had three double fatalities this year to date, and certainly in that first quarter we alluded to there's been three fatal road accidents with five fatalities. The only thing I would say is I would just throw a slight caution in terms of allowing us to have a proper investigation into the circumstances behind every single investigation. You'll be aware that any fatal road accident, there is a huge investigation takes place, and these are still ongoing at the moment. And until such a time as we get a real understanding of potential factors that could be causes or contributory factors towards these, I'd be slightly cautious in terms of that knee-jerk reaction. Albeit, I am mindful there is, all our fatal road accidents have just taken place in two stretches of road, one being the A68 and the other being on the A6094. And I can rest assured that the levels of discussions with partners, Transport Scotland and things, are taking place just to see if we can identify any key issues that are emerging from them. A lot of work ongoing there, and I think, again, Mr Marshall alluded to the fact the vast majority of these accidents are caused by driver behaviour, and they definitely are. What I can give you some reassurances, we've been very proactive this year in terms of trying to address that. And I speak about numbers relating to speeding, numbers relating to people using mobile phones, number of people not wearing their seatbelt, and drink driving. All these figures are up in Midlothian, which for me, this may sound perverse, but that's a really, really positive thing, because what I'm seeing is my officers, my road policing officers, and my trunk road policing officers taking quite a robust stance in that and trying to address driver behaviour with our overall concept of reducing killed or seriously injured people on our roads. I want to move now to a page 46, which is reducing antisocial behaviour and reducing the number of incidents of antisocial behaviour reported by members. Again, this says it's off target, but I genuinely want to have a look at your 18 incidents above where we were last year, but in the grand scheme of things, in over 3,000 incidents, I would say we're virtually on par where we were last year. But one big area of concern for me is the rise in the level of youth calls, youth-related disorder. That's definitely a challenge for us. I make no bones about that. Dalkeith Town Centre, Yarnock Court, Waterfall Park, King's Park, we had issues at New Battle Golf Course, and that's on the east side. I then move that across Bonnyrigg, we've got the problem solving policing, and we now have this emerging theme and trend within Straighton. I want to give assurances that there's a lot of work ongoing into that, and when you benchmark that against my MCART report, you'll see the funded officers are spending a lot of time trying to address this issue in conjunction with my community beat officers. And I've also brought in extra resources. We've managed to get resources through from Glasgow for this weekend as well to assist us just in terms of that process as well. Further work needs to be done, though, just in terms of that partnership-wise and trying to tackle some of our higher tariff young people. And I know that we're knocking at an open door. The Children's Services, they're absolutely up for that in terms of trying to get a different approach to individuals that we can identify early on as potentially being high tariff, because there's little doubt that they are having a huge influence on those round about them. So I think if we can get to these individuals early, we'll have a significant part to play. But my community beat officers are fully alive to that, and hopefully as and when the model round about the estates and them getting their footprint into identified areas within their communities, I'm hoping that they'll build up a better relationship with young people in particular, and we'll see this level reducing. I'd like to move on now to the page 47, tackling serious organised crime and increase the number of detections for drug supply. Whilst it shows there we're off target for the first 6 months, I can give some reassurances that lots of these have been pending some forensics and some stuff coming back from our lab regarding analysis of substances that have been recovered, and I can tell you that the current position as of today's date, we're actually up 21%, so we've been pretty proactive in terms of our approach to drug dealing, and that will continue because I do know that it's still a priority area for our members of the community. So to give some assurances, whilst the first 6 months are off target, we're certainly firmly back on target and beyond that. Moving on to page 49, 60, priority 7, reducing housebreaking. Yeah, it's definitely my number one priority in Midlothian. And interestingly, we've just had our second sort of quarter of our survey, our Your View Counts survey results back for Midlothian. And interestingly, it came as no surprise to me, but out of the 347 returns, houses being broken into was the number one priority for people in Midlothian, with 53.1% of all individuals who reported back saying that that was the number one priority for them within Midlothian, and I'm not going to disagree with that. I really want to reassure members that there is a vast amount of work being ploughed into this area of business, working really closely with my colleagues within the CID, our proactive units, which are all plain clothed units. We've now piloting a crime car which operates through the evening, which combines my road policing officers along with one of my community investigation units. So we have the ability to can respond quickly, but we also have that investigative ability as well. And I have to say, initial returns from that car have been very, very productive in terms of the work that they're doing. We had a day of action very recently where we swept up 11 of our most prolific offenders, reported them to the Crown Office, and in terms of the crimes that they were reported for, they totaled about £102,000 in terms of the crimes that they'd committed in terms of value-wise. In terms of prevention, I genuinely want to use this opportunity to promote. I know the Community Safety Partnership have the initiative Lockdown Crime in Midlothian, and you're hopefully going to see a lot more of that and that being pushed and promoted. I'm very, very keen. I was hoping Kevin, for the advertiser, was here today. he chooses a day where I really wanted his help not to attend, but I'll contact Kevin after it. But I want to do a feature in terms of lockdown crime in Midlothian, because I genuinely believe we need the eyes and ears of the community to help us. I know there's been a lot of proactive steps done, and we're regularly tweeting and we're regularly giving out crime prevention advice, but I genuinely think that the community are the key to this. As the boss alluded to, we are getting targeted from people from the east, we're getting targeted from people from the west, but I'm also alive to the fact we do have our own criminals within Midlothian who are active as well. But for assurances for members, I'm giving every level of resource that I can to this within Midlothian, because I'm determined to get on top of the break-ins, not just to houses, but the break-ins to sheds in particular, where people who have prized mountain bikes valued at thousands of pounds are going and being stolen, and I genuinely believe they're being targeted for that. So we've got a lot of work to do in that regard, but we will keep on banging on in this drum. But hopefully by promoting the fact, it's a real difficult one for us. Do we go and do we increase the fear of crime? I think I'm now past that stage, and I want people to actually wake up and smell the coffee within Midlothian. It's not going away, and we're genuinely needing the help of every member of the community to address this. If they have information or they see suspicious activity, please come forward and tell us. It's helping us, but ultimately it's going to be helping them. So housebreaking will continue to be my priority area number one till the end of this year and probably beyond. But as the boss alluded to, I think in terms of capturing people, we're ahead of the game, ahead of the curve in terms of where we benchmark ourselves against other authority areas throughout Scotland. But I'm keen to reduce victimisation, and always will be. That will be my priority, is to reduce the numbers as opposed to continually locking up the bad people and putting it out with. On that note, Chair, I'm happy to take questions on this report before we move on to the MCAT report, or I'm happy to move across to that as well.
Thank you, Kenny. Questions and comments? Councillor Muirhead.
Thanks, Chair. I've got a number of questions. Some of them you've answered, so I'll skip them, obviously. On page 37, stop and search the results. So you make the comment there that you know, the way that the statistics have been put together has changed and there's nothing to compare it with. You know, almost 30% positive. Is that quite a high figure? Because it does seem to be to me. Do you want me to ask them all, or can I jump back and forward a wee bit?
Yeah,
29%. I mean, I think in terms of even when I think back to last year and the years before, we've always sat between sort of 23%, 25%, 29% is quite high. But as we've said all along, our main intention is to focus on intelligence-led, intelligence-driven, stopping and searching people for the right reasons in the right place at the right time. So 29% is high, but it's encouraging for me. It's because we're actually being out, we're being proactive, and we're targeting the right people.
Page 43, I just, if you could explain, I wasn't really clear on the middle of the page there, talking about the number of collisions. On a positive note, the number of collisions as opposed to casualties that resulted in fatal or serious injury decreased from 26 to 20. I'm just not clear what that means. If you could just maybe explain.
Yeah, what that means is actually what we've had, we've actually had fewer road accidents, but in these fewer road accidents that we've had have actually resulted in more people being injured. So what I think the point they're trying to make there is actually overall there's been less accidents, but unfortunately for us, there have been more casualties in that smaller amount of accidents, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I'm just being stupid. You're right. One positive point on that, I'm glad to see that the community beat officers have been trained to use the handheld devices, because it is something that I think we see across all communities. I was going to say boy racers, that's probably not fair, but it's probably true. But, you know, that kind of activity, and you've got limited resources in terms of traffic officers, so it's really helpful if they can be using that, and maybe we should all be feeding back the kind of hotspots and the issues, because, you know, there are areas that happens quite a lot. So that's a positive one there. The antisocial behaviour on page 46, that I find concerning. The 29% of all antisocial behaviour calls across the division, for Midlothian as a population in terms of the division, 18%. So it's high. It's a lot higher than it should be. Now you talk about a high proportion of it being in town centres. Could you clarify where you're talking about? Is it just, you know, Dalkeith? And what is a high proportion? You know, if you maybe just give a bit more detail on that, just to get a feeling for what how significant that is in comparison to the antisocial behaviour we have in other areas.
Yeah, I could provide you with stats all day, and I think it's probably something I'll get a bit of work done, and I'll circulate it to board members. Dalkeith Town Centre in particular does account for a disproportionate amount. If I can tell you that in terms of ward areas in Scotland, it's now the third worst. So that's the extent of what we're dealing with in Dalkeith Town Centre. Hence the reason why I've managed to get in some extra resources, drawn on some national resources in an effort to address that. But it's not a stat I'm particularly proud of, but we have seen a particular spike. And what we have a cohort of probably between 20 to 25 individuals who we'll displace them from the Dalkeith Town Centre, and they'll move to other areas in the Woodburn area, and then they'll be moved from there to elsewhere. So it's disproportionate, far, far disproportionate. We're also aware of the fact Bonnyrigg had a slight spike in terms of it in Bonnyrigg, and the problem-solving partnership there seems to have been effective, as it was in Woodburn. But unfortunately, what we are finding is we're displacing it. So it's that continual chase for us. You've already heard there are pockets of it everywhere, to be fair. You know, Mayfield round about, you know, the bin fires and things in Mayfield, it has it. And my emerging trend at the moment is relating to straightening the retail park in there. But if I can give some assurance in terms of the process, and are we picking up these trends quickly? Yes, we are. There is a weekly antisocial behaviour multi-agency meeting where the analyst is providing weekly analysis in terms of that. So we're looking at where do we best place our resources and what else can be done with that. So if I can give you some assurance, we're pretty well on top of patterns and emerging trends that are coming through. It's a longer term challenge for us to get that reduced.
I'm getting there, I'm just about finished. Can I make a sort of general comment about the layout of these reports? What we've got there is the current situation, then we've got reasons. And I find on just reading the report that the reasons tend to really just be like a breakdown of the figures that are in the current situation part of it. And what's helpful, I would think would be helpful, would be to get some understanding of, and I realise you may know what to put it down in the report as such, but the theory behind why some of these situations are developing. And I'll give you an example. On page 47, the tackling serious organised crime, you did give me a bit more a narrative on the reasons for that here that isn't in the paper. And it's just, as I say, I can understand why you may not want to go and do it in black and white on some of your ideas, but I think it's helpful for us to try and understand some of the backgrounds to why things are happening, even if you're not 100% certain that you're sure about the result yet. And one other thing on page 50, I'm not sure it's actually a question really for the police as such, but you're talking about the housebreaking. Obviously, there's been a big drop on the detection rates, which you've touched on, but one specific bit where you're talking about 25 individuals being charged with housebreaking offences committed in Midlothian, and the details are passed by the police to the Midlothian Community Safety Team for enforcement action, follow-up. Can I ask what actions are being taken by the Community Safety Team regarding these particular areas?
Thanks, Chair. I'll take that one. Certainly, we get reporting back from our police colleagues in terms of reoffending through the criminal justice team, but equally the community safety team's role there is to determine where there are either existing council tenancies or, again, our colleagues in the housing associations participate in the antisocial behaviour and violent offender group. So it's making sure that there are consequences as a result of misbehaviours or criminality and following up on that, whether it's an intervention, depending on what the circumstances are in a household, as well as an escalation to a sanction. So we have had ASBOs and evictions take place as a consequence of some of those reports.
Hey, thanks, Kevin. Did you want to add anything to that as well, Ken?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Councillor's comment question about the style and format of the report, I think, is absolutely right up to the minute. I really welcome those comments, because this work that we want to do in terms of refreshing what does the policing plans look like going forward, and probably more significantly, what did these reports look like? The reality was these were designed a few years ago, and there wasn't much perhaps latitude in that. The sort of current thinking from the executive and the steer is that we can be more bespoke and tailor those so that they actually fulfil the needs of the boards. But I think probably significantly for me, it stems from that different approach to what the policing plans look like, outcomes, and those much more significant questions about the trends in the long term and what do we do collectively to address those issues, rather than perhaps in the minutiae of why that's gone up 1% or 2%. So it's a much broader conversation. So your comments are absolutely spot on, and I really welcome that. And I would open it up if there are any further views about what the board would like to see in those papers. We will fold that into the work that we're doing. And I know that colleagues from Fire and Rescue are doing exactly the same stuff. So it's about having that much bigger, richer picture and bringing that here and having much bigger conversations. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you. I agree with that point as well, actually. I think it's been commented on this board before that sometimes you do get the papers and you see a spike and you wonder whether that's a good or a bad thing. So thank you for that. Councillor Montgomery, followed by Councillor Wallace.
Thanks, Chair. You mentioned earlier about the football match in Hogmanay, and the festive periods are difficult enough time anyway. I mean, for the life of me, I just can't believe that they've actually agreed the Old Firm game in Hogmanay. I mean, it's going to be a difficult enough day as it is. And why they didn't sort of put it back, I mean, obviously it was a kind of pub conversation among a number of other things, but why they didn't have it sort of 2 or 3 days after Hogmanay, when things have maybe calmed down a bit and folk are a bit more tired and not as hyper as they would be on the day of the game. But, and it is an early kick-off as well, so I mean, folk will be actually, you know, well on the road before the bell's at 12 o'clock. I mean, is there any... And maybe you're not in a position to say, but I mean, I know it's happened before, certainly in Pennycook. The police have actually just popped into the pubs, just showed face for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, everything going okay, guys, enjoying the game, and going back out. And it actually did seem to work because it gave not an impression, but it let folk know there was a police presence there. And I don't know, are there any plans to do the likes of that this year? Because I think on Hogmanay this year, I think it could be one of the bigger ones that could actually happen.
No, absolutely. As far as the rationale and the decision-making about the game and the timing of it and all the rest of it, that's not something that I have been party to or B, would be able to influence. And there's a range of factors, obviously. So I would not sort of step into that. As far as what we will be doing locally, absolutely. And it'll be done on a nationally coordinated level, that there will be resources who will be tasked to do all of that early engagement throughout, and that's actually an approach that we do for any Old Firm game, but especially then. I suppose the one benefit is, around about the timing of it, we will be fully mobilised then anyway. So the reality is we will have officers, right, and they'll be doing exactly as you say, in and out of all the pubs and on the streets and engaging, because that's the best barometer that we've got, and we can intervene early and deal with things before they develop. So that will be absolutely, you know, Kenny's alluded to it, we're passionate about preventing an early intervention. So that to me is what we'll be doing on that day, and not just ourselves, obviously all the other partners as well.
Can I just assure it's unfortunately for me, for my sins, I'm the duty officer that day. So I've been heavily involved in the planning for a divisional-wide planning for that, and I can give you assurance we do have a robust policing plan in place for the football.
I quite agree. That's quite horrifying. Councillor Wallace.
Yeah, we know from the licensing board that Dalkeith is one of the highest licensed places in Scotland, if not even the first. And you say that the antisocial behaviour is now the third highest in Scotland. Is there any correlation between what's happening and the consumption of alcohol or drugs?
I think in terms of alcohol, we've documented it a few times in terms of the correlation between Dalkeith and the relationship between alcohol, particularly around about violence. I think the particular spike at this point in time in relation to antisocial behaviour is more around about youth disorder. And I'm not saying that that's not heavily as influenced with alcohol, because there is an element of alcohol fuelled in there, but there's also a large element that's not alcohol fuelled. It's groups of youths who are running amok, to be honest, at times, and that's at all times of the day. But there is absolutely no doubt whatsoever. We've clearly documented, and we have done, in the over-provision policy just in relation to what alcohol does in terms of contributing towards crime and also antisocial behaviour.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Chair. I had an interesting discussion last week with one of my constituents who lived abroad. I can't remember the country they were comparing it with, but they said the difference between the policing here and there is that in that country, police would be much more investigative, more proactive. If they're driving past something and they were at least suspicious, they would stop and check it out. But that doesn't happen in this country. And it chimed with one or two other instances people have said to me. Oh, the police came along, they had a look round, turned the car around and went off. And I just wonder whether, looking at the statistics, whether there's an incentive to adopt that kind of attitude, that percentage of incidents reported which have been solved, etc. And where you don't get an improvement in those statistics, then it's not a job worth doing, even though I would sense that, you know, if you see a house that's maybe the lights are out and you're not sure, you see a window open or something, have a quick look round. But I get the feeling that we're not encouraging our police officers to do that. To, you know, they're doing the job, but just doing that a little bit extra, if they've got the time, obviously if they're called away on important business, that's a different matter. But if they have got the time, slow down the car, get out, take a wander around, then get back in rather than swivelling around and driving off and ticking the box that you've been there.
It's perhaps a a philosophical question rather than a direct one. I would like to think that all of our officers do have an investigative approach, because that's what's drummed into you when you join the service. And I think that still exists in the hearts and minds of all the officers. I think the reality, though, is that officers quite often are busy dealing with ongoing incidents, and that unallocated patrol time that perhaps allows them to be proactive is perhaps not as much as we would like it to be, or maybe not as much as other jurisdictions. That's a big, maybe political, philosophical discussion about the investment that we have in policing. But I would be protective and defensive, I suppose, of my officers to say that absolutely they will want to investigate. And if there's anything suspicious or anyone behaving in a suspicious way, they're not going to drive past that. They're going to deal with it. Or if they're out on foot, deal with it. Because when I speak to them and I speak to my officers, that's the part of the job that they love to do.
Thank you. I just have one other point that hasn't been picked up yet. Two, actually. One is around the increase in hate crime. And I know that there's a comment there about attitudinal behaviours changing, if you like, across Midlothian. And I remember after we had the EU referendum, I had asked at the time if there had been any increase, and there wasn't. And so I was a bit concerned that there is now an increase in our post-Brexit Trump world, if you like. So I just wanted to a wee bit more detail about what you are doing, because I think quite often with these types of things, we preach to the converted quite a lot, and particularly kids in schools and things. I think the ones who are proactive and know these things are great at shouting about it, and sometimes it's the harder to reach ones that we need to speak to. And secondly, was just on the point of the Old Firm match on Hogmanay, and I know that this will be a focus, but I just wanted to get some reassurance that domestic violence prevention will also be a key part of that strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. That is an absolutely key part of it. And Kenny's alluded to the robust plan that we've got in locally, but that's built in because we know that there is a spike. The last Old Firm game, there was a spike, and we know that. So there'll be a national and local approach to both of those things, both in terms of media and the actual enforcement and visibility of what we do. So, yeah, that's an intrinsic part of any significant event such as the Old Firm game. It's not exclusively around the Old Firm game, but it is particularly acute with it. Kenny, you want to do the hate crime one?
Yeah, just again give you some reassurance. We're not witnessing any post-Brexit or post-Trump, as the case is at the moment with it. And just in terms of it, I mean, yeah, it's up slightly, and you could take that as a very, very positive. Quite a number of these actually relate to my own officers. You know, in terms of abuse directed towards my own officers for it. We're not seeing any trend, we're not seeing anything of any great concern, or there is no minority groups being marginalised or being targeted at all at this point in time within Midlothian, and long may that continue. In terms of the educational stuff, we do work with schools and things and trying to embed that concept early on, but I'm not seeing anything at all of any huge concern for me at the moment in Midlothian. And a significant part for me was the pledge with every partner taken on board and their part to play within this, because hate crime is involved with everybody.
Good, thank you. That was very reassuring. If everybody's happy to move on to the Midlothian Community Police Team report.
Okay, Chair, I don't propose to dwell on this in any great detail. A couple of issues I do want to highlight, just when you look at the additional information and incidents in note. Again, I highlight the variety or work that the officers have been involved in. And I know I sought and got clearance for me to have the flexibility of deploying my funded officers in plain clothes or uniform. I have to say that's been hugely beneficial for me in terms of how I can actually deploy these officers. Some of the stuff in there around about youth, which has shown a robust stance with youth. There is stuff in there around about road traffic. And then, obviously, headline grabbers are always when we talk about putting a worth against drug recoveries. You'll see a large cannabis cultivation there down in Mayfield, valued about £36,000, was taken out. And probably the one for me most significantly is on page 58, where the second bullet point down there regarding the cannabis plants that were deposited at the Stobhill Recycling Centre. I have to say that is a fantastic bit of work by the staff member at Midlothian Council who identified that, had the savvy to take the registration number or the vehicle that had dumped off that stuff, which led to this significant recovery of drugs. And I think what that highlighted to me, and I fed that through John Blair and his integrity group that he's got now established within Midlothian Council, where he has all different departments involved in it and raising the awareness around about serious and organised crime. This was a fantastic bit of working for it. And you could well have just left it and his laurels, no bother reporting anything, but to actually have the awareness to take the car registration number and then report that through QuickTime, we acted upon it quickly and a significant recovery, over £50,000 worth. So a lot of really good work taking place by the teams. And again, they're very much directed, and in terms of where the patrol comes through that multi-agency approach and through the weekly TAC process and the monthly delivery group process. And on that note, happy to take any questions that there may well be.
Thanks, Kenny. Any questions or comments? No? All happy? Councillor Muirhead.
Could I just...
Sorry, Councillor Muirhead, and then Councillor Devink.
Sorry, Peter. Something occurred to me when I was going through the incidents of note. And I realise this wouldn't be an easy thing, but I think it would be pretty invaluable for us, is that what we see here is descriptions of particular incidents and what the police have done with it. And what we didn't see, you know, for obvious reasons, is what then happens. You know, what's the result of that? Now, I realise we'd have to do it retrospectively. You'd have to go back at least 6 months, probably more, and look at the issues that have been highlighted to us like this and give us some narrative about what's actually happened to the individuals concerned, because I think that's a major issue as far as the police enforcing things. When I've not got any evidence of this, but I get the impression that there's frustration because the courts are only actually progressing that in the way that we would, as a community, would hope that they would be. I would like to see if it was possible for us to get that kind of information. I realise it's a wee bit of work, but I think it would be helpful to the police as well. You may already have it, but it's something I think that certainly as elected members it would be helpful to have, and for the members of the public to see what the consequences of some of these activities actually are.
Again, your question's absolutely bang on the money. I suppose my difficulty is in terms of fundamentally for us as police not straying out with our parameters and our legislative framework and our statutory responsibilities. We are fundamentally a reporting agency to the fiscal or other agencies who are then responsible for deciding in terms of prosecution and the balance of that, and then beyond that, judiciary in terms of the disposals. Interesting, we don't necessarily get we don't get a feedback loop on any cases that we submit. So I think your questions are absolutely right about outcome. I don't think necessarily we've got that in our gift to provide, and I'm not sure in terms of the governance and whether that's appropriate. Now, that's maybe something that the scrutiny board would want to explore, and I'm not trying to dodge it because I actually think your question's absolutely spot on. But I wouldn't want to commit my service to providing information which is really at the gift of the Fiscal Service or the Scottish Court Service or another agency who's provided in that, because that would be me straying into territory that's not my own, if that answers your question.
And I think as well, the, when we in the Community Safety Justice Partnership, this is something that's came up as well. And I think when we've been looking at strategies about reoffending and trying to follow that through and see what is the value, if you like. But I'd be happy to see if that's something that the Safety Justice Partnership could pick up rather than the Scrutiny Board here. But I think it's definitely be welcome for further investigation.
I can understand the difficulties that the police would have with it, and it would need to be widened out. But I think, you know, the bigger partnership in terms of community justice, I think we need to look at it for certain, because I think there's a, you know, human nature that officers may be less inclined to go down a particular road if they know there's not going to be an outcome at the end of the day. You know, it's about prioritising their time and all the rest of it, and as resources get scarcer, I think that kind of thing will factor in even more. So I really think that it's something that would be extremely helpful.
Yeah, thanks. I think we can take that on board as an action. Councillor Devinck.
Could I just compliment the police about how they now do every single local community council that I attend send officers, and the officers are well informed and they show great interest, and it's an enormous improvement to what it was a year ago. And while I always want to be critical, I want to really compliment you, because it's so important that they know what goes on in the local community.
Okay, thank you. And Councillor Montgomery.
Hi, thanks, Chair. It's all just a comment. When you look at the number of incidents or whatever on the two pages of reports here, for 3 months, if my addition's right, there's 771 over the 3 month period which the community action team has been investigating or been involved in, and 1,009 hours, which again by my calculations is 40 days worth of work, but over shifts it would probably be more than that. Just a disappointing thing for myself, and I don't know if everybody else would agree, is how's that going to be covered after the CAT squads are no longer there after April. And it's more a comment. I'm not looking for a big argument about it, but I think it'd be remiss of us not to make the comment, because we have in the past.
Thanks, Councillor Montgomery. Councillor Wallace.
Could I just inform Councillor Montgomery that in September of this year, police numbers, according to Police Scotland, were 1,011 more than they were in 2007. So Police Scotland has more police officers up to September of this year. So there must be more policemen than there was in 2007.
Just on that, Chair, there'll be 14 less in Midlothian after April. I mean, that's not a, you don't need to be a genius to work.
Where does he get his figures for that we're going to 14 less policemen in Midlothian? And let's face it, if that was the whole of Midlothian, that would be spread over three shifts, which only brings you down to three or four a shift.
Thank you, Councillor Wallace. Councillor Muirhead.
I'm not going to engage in the tit for tat on that. I want to ask a specific question, just for a sort of comment. I looked at the, I wasn't at the last board meeting because I was on holiday, but I looked at the figures that were produced for the CAT team, the breakdown of the performance indicators the last time, and I noticed a significant reduction in the tasking to the areas antisocial behaviour hotspots. I think we had something like 2,100 hours, 2,173 in the previous report for that very first figure there, and it's 1,009. I realise there's all sorts of operational reasons, but could you just comment on that, because it seems a fair reduction. And also the party house visits had gone down from 9 to 2, and the antisocial behaviour, youth antisocial behaviour calls attended for 164 down to 123.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever going to be a perfect science, councillor, behind this, just in terms of what their demands are. If they're involved in drug cultivations in particular, they're hugely time-consuming because they have to be done properly and have to be done right. I will look behind it for you, but what I can and I'll reassure individuals is that in terms of tasking-wise, the tasking is done and very much done in that partnership approach round about antisocial behaviour and round about what's the key priority areas that they deliver on. They're governed very much by the five key areas or high priority areas through the community safety partnership aspect, and just depends in terms of what the taskings are. Some you might get next month where they've got a vast majority of their stuff is spent on youth and antisocial behaviour, but that'll obviously be to the detriment potentially of tackling drug issues. What I will say, if you do get information or intelligence coming through regarding cultivations, that will become a priority area for them and for them to deal with, for obvious reasons. And it's not just the fact of trying to get prosecutions, it's more about the public health element with it and the public safety, because anybody with drug cultivation, potential fire risk that's involved there, so we'll act upon that very quickly. So there's no perfect science behind it, and you are going to get fluctuations with regards to that, but I'll look at what the difference is between the first quarter and the second quarter for you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions or comments? No. Unless there's any other business, this meeting is now finished. And can I just thank fire and police and rescue colleagues for the hard work, particularly over the fireworks season. I know it's very busy, but I'm pleased that it's went quite positively this year. At the moment, we don't have a date of the next meeting, is that correct? To be confirmed. Thank you very much. Sorry, I stand corrected. 25th of February next year.